A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G,
yo. And George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
That's the five for the Rockets, and here we go. Houston down by one. Van Vliet fought three, takes a three for the lead. Inside they fight. Buzzer game. The Grizzlies have won. They avoid the season sweep, and they come up with the victory and beat the Houston Rockets.
That was an ugly finish in a game that was fantastic from start to finish, as the Grizzlies took down the Houston Rockets 120-119. So I guess it can't be fantastic from start to finish if the finish was ugly. But look, the Rockets were due for a game like this, and since we are in the honeymoon phase, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed, but I'm going to let it roll off my shoulders and save it to bring it up 2 to 3 months later, like a proper woman should.
Yeah, you know, you got to give them some, you got to give, you know, wins to people sometimes you play them. You can't sweep the Grizzlies. That's just mean, Paul. You gotta give them one game.
Oh, that's just Bears mentality.
You right gotta now. Give them, you gotta give them one no, game. Let the Grizzlies no. get a win this year.
No,
it was fine. It was a really entertaining game.
It was entertaining.
It was a very entertaining game from start to finish. You are going to lose games like this. Coming off the Hawks game, which you gave up a lead and you held on, you're not going to hold on to the lead every single time. And the final play, obviously, is the one that's getting the most conversation right now because of who took the final shot, because it's Fred VanVleet. I think people clearly don't like that. I'm not going to be up in arms about it because the play wasn't for him. So, like, there's no, I can't be up in arms about something that wasn't designed for him.
The play was for Amen Thompson per Ime Udoka after the game. Was that the best idea, given that Thompson was clearly dealing with some sort of back injury for the last 3 minutes and is limited as a shooter? Maybe not. I'm of the belief that you draw plays to get people open, and it doesn't matter who takes the last shot. What the hell is this? The Wild West? Do we need to play Ennio Morricone spaghetti western music in the background? And you've got either Jalen Green or Fred VanVleet with one of those old-fashioned cigarillos in their mouth, dribbling the ball down until the shot clock's about to expire. Then they go up for a shot, only to, for the most part, when last possessions end up like this, miss! Do you not remember James Harden? How many times did he actually make it at the very end? How many times do any star players make it at the very end? I hate this. It's all part of this me generation. We got to have the star player take the last shot. Shut up. That's so dumb. They're all in the NBA. They're professionals. Work to get the open shot. It's a team sport. I saw that last night after I was done the live stream, and I just started thinking to myself, God, NBA fans, like, do not get it. You just don't get it. I do. Born in Boston, 18 titles. Was I alive for many of them? Shut up. Not the point. The open guy gets the final shot. And that play, not a good play. So it had to go to Fred VanVleet, who did have an open look. It just wasn't the best look to take. But all this crying about, like, oh, Jalen Green should take the last shot. He was 1 for 6 down the stretch. He was doing bad things down the stretch. Fred VanVleet was doing bad things down the stretch. They played very sloppy at the very end of the game. But this last shot debate, embrace debate, how about embrace my nuts? Shut up. Shut up.
They're all paid to be there. Fred VanVleet's the most expensive player on the roster. He makes $42 million a year. Like, that's what he's here for. Veteran presence, closing presence. Like, that's, it makes sense for him to be the number two option. Now, yes, Jalen Green's struggling towards the end. I get where Rockets fans are like, well, just Jalen Green should just be taking the shot. But that's not based on anything besides wanting Jalen Green to be something that he's not, which is a closer right now. I mean, it's...
He's not a closer.
Amen Thompson is the closer. And it's...
We saw him do it against the Celtics.
Exactly. And the play is designed for Amen Thompson. So, clearly, the coach is telling you that Jalen Green is not the guy that they want to have the ball in his hands when the shot clock's expiring at the end of a game. They want Amen Thompson to have it. And they doubled him, and he had to give it up, and... yeah, I guess you'd say semantics. That could have been Jalen Green in that position instead of Fred, but that's Fred's job. He's a starting point guard on this team. You're right. It's as long as Steven Adams and Jayshon Tate don't take the last shot, and I know Adams wasn't out there, only Tate was. But like, as long as Steven Adams and someone of that caliber is not taking the final shot, you look at this Rockets roster. You can't constantly be talking about how deep it is, how good it is, all these young guys, all these guys who can be star players and good players and the core seven. But then at the end of the game, you're like, oh, I hate when any of them take a shot. No, like the best player or the open player takes a shot. Fred was open. He missed it.
He's in the NBA. All of these guys, for the most part, are capable of hitting it. If Tari Eason was open, I would have been cool with Tari Eason taking the shot, even if he's a 30% shooter. What's Amen Thompson's career from outside? 20? The guy's open, take the shot. Because I think the open shot is the best way to win in that situation. Could it have been a better play? 100%. But yeah, there was this debate online. I'm just like, guys, not the time, not the place. They lost. They've been on the road for a while. Let's relax. But I hate basketball culture with a passion. Like, this is coming from a guy who, when I play pickup basketball, if you play a lick of defense with anybody, like, I just think that basketball culture is generally soft, and there's this me stuff in the back because you worship all the stars in this league. But guess what? It's a team game ultimately, and if you have a good team, which the Rockets are one of the best in the NBA this year, you work it to get the open shot. Fred VanVleet on that play gets the ball back. He did have an open look, and Fred VanVleet has said earlier this year, even if I go 0 for 20, I'm going to keep shooting. I have no problem with him shooting the ball in that situation. Would have been nicer to have some better shots before that.
Yes.
And not that Jalen Green out of control possession before that. Because I think that's really where they lost the game. It's not about like who took the final shot.
No, because for me, the final shot, it's you can't be a hypocrite based on the result. You have to. It's almost like the Trevor Lawrence thing in a way, where like we're not going to complain about CJ Stroud if he gets hit in the way that Trevor Lawrence did. Would anyone be complaining today about Fred taking that shot if it goes in?
No.
No, exactly. So then, like, it's not a bad shot.
If he makes the shot, Rockets
launch! Boom. So then it's not a bad shot. It's not a bad play. It didn't go the way they wanted it to, and it's a regular season game. You're not going to win every single basketball game. Does it raise questions about, like, how you advance deeper into the playoffs with Amen Thompson, sure, who can't shoot threes as a closer? Yeah, I think that's a fair question to, like, where we're having the conversation yesterday about how far this team can go. I'm comfortable saying that they could get to the Western Conference Finals, but I think one of the biggest questions I would have is that when you close, if they're going to double Amen like this, is do you trust the guys around him to hit their open shots when it matters most? And I think often, probably 50-50 in terms of like trust level, I would say, depending on who has the ball and how they've played that day. But it's a bigger question for me. It's more about like Amen's getting the ball. It continues the fact of what you said, Paul, is that he is a star. He is the guy that even in a loss, he's the guy that Ime trusts the most. That to me says way more about last night's game than the actual results of it.
Now that is interesting. Maybe Udoka trusts the wrong person. And I suppose you could make that argument given the play, especially that considering Thompson had a moment down the stretch after that back injury where he also screwed up. Like there were a lot of mistakes down the stretch. They looked like they were going to pull away with this game in the third quarter. Did that against the Hawks. Weren't able to close out. Learning experience for a young team. They've been on the road for a while. You know, I think that's another part of this that has to be considered. So I'm not here to get mad at that game. I'm disappointed, but I mean, they've been playing so well of late. They were due for one of these last second games to go against them. And, you know, it's crazy. I mean, down the stretch, you have that referee completely screwing up, thinking that the Grizzlies head coach had called a timeout while the Rockets were kind of lost in transition defense. Memphis had a breakaway layup, and that referee ruled that the Memphis coach called the timeout. I saw that. I don't think I've ever seen that.
I was just thinking the same thing. I don't think I've ever seen that in anything.
I really wanted to, and I mean, I know this is like not rooting for sportsmanship, but just because of how funny it would have been so funny if that referee gave the Grizzlies head coach a technical foul for justifiably being pissed off at truly one of the worst calls ever. Like, you go back and watch the replay, like, he doesn't make any timeout motion.
He's telling them to run.
Right. And And it's funny, like, watching afterwards the replay, they zoom in. And the referee's basically, like, telling him to watch it, buddy. And you're thinking to yourself, dude, this is one of the rare instances where you screwed up and you should be on your knees apologizing.
That's actually where, like, if the Rockets win last night's game because of that, I know the Rockets failed in their protest of the Spurs game, which the dunk went in and came out. I actually think the NBA would have to take a hard look at that if the Grizzlies filed a protest last night, if they would have lost, and be like, we might have to replay the final whatever seconds of the game.
But the problem is they're not playing each other again the rest of the year because this is the fourth and final game. So they wouldn't have been able to do it.
Before the All-Star break or something.
Yeah. Like at the All-Star break?
They're just like right after or something.
Yeah. But like I don't know how you wouldn't justify if the Rockets would have won last night not redoing that because it's wild.
The NBA always finds a way not to do a replay. Like the last one's still from like 15 years ago where they like miscounted timeouts or something.
Right.
Like it has to be like a mistake where it's like a misapplication of rules, not just like a refereeing mistake. And so that's how they like justify it. But yeah, that one, I was already like, as the timeout was being called and Taylor Jenkins was freaking out, I was like, are the Rockets going to get away with one again? Like, are they going to, is this, and then when Jaren Jackson went to the line, I was like, is this going to be like a Darius Garland, like poop his pants
by
situation?
The way, Fred VanVleet just rubbed sweat on Jaren Jackson as he was about to take those free throw attempts. It almost makes up for how many botched plays VanVleet had down the stretch.
I think that was his biggest, that was the best chance he gave the Rockets of winning in the last 3 minutes was that right there.
Seriously.
We've seen shoe untying. We've seen like all sorts of, we've seen people walk over and talk to the free throw shooter. This is an innovation I can get behind by Fred VanVleet.
Just rubbing sweat.
$40 million well spent.
On the other side, Alperen Şengün's an all-star, and I'm going to try to make amends with the Turkish psycho Şengün stands. But what's more disrespectful, you can answer this, the fact that the Rockets, per mybookie.ag, have the 10th best odds to win the championship, or the fact that the Rockets have just one game on national TV the rest of the way? You can answer that. We'll talk about Şengün getting to the All-Star game. Stay put!
Alperen Şengün is an All-Star. I'm just letting everybody here know it. The Wizard is an All-Star. You heard it here first.
That's Tari Eason interrupting a Vanessa Richardson and Alperen Şengün interview earlier this year. And guess what? Alperen Şengün is, in fact, an All-Star. The first Houston Rocket All-Star since 2020. James Harden. Russell Westbrook. 16th pick in 2021. Pretty damn good 16th pick. Averaging 19.1 points a game, 10.4 rebounds a game, and 5 assists a game for the Rockets. He is a Western Conference reserve. And yesterday I found out that his nickname is the Wizard. Do you know why, Joe?
I got no idea.
He loves Harry Potter.
Oh, I did know that. That makes sense. I just didn't realize he correlated that to a nickname.
Plus his skillful passing and footwork. I like a Gen Zer who likes Harry Potter.
I didn't know like that Harry Potter was big in Turkey, but
I would imagine it would be banned in Turkey. Oh, I'm sorry. I've got to stop taking pot shots. But Gen Zers love to go after millennials for our love of Harry Potter. And to them, I say Avada Kedavra.
Well, Harry Potter's coming back in a big way.
Yeah, the HBO show.
Total thing I'm going to watch.
There's no way they nailed the kid actors as well as they nailed them.
No, it was perfect.
They might.
I don't know.
I believe.
Daniel Radcliffe's don't grow on trees.
Give me an Oblivious. I'll just forget about the movies. Because the books were better, said everybody who's read a series of books.
I'll take your word for it.
They're just long.
Oh, well, I mean, Joe, I know you're from, Illinois. And like, what is it like?
I just rather play.
State can't read.
No, that's not true. I just rather be outside than read.
Wow.
Play sports, nerds. Yeah. That's what he's into.
That's what Joe just told us. Damn.
So I'm not into wizards.
So I did ask that question. What is more disrespectful? The fact that the Rockets have one game on national TV the rest of the way. The NBA's flexing rules are weird. Like they have less flexibility than the NFL. It's very bizarre. Or that they are 10th in odds to win the title. They are behind the following teams: Celtics, Thunder, Cavs, Knicks, Nuggets, Mavericks, Bucks, Grizzlies, Clippers. I heard earlier today Lance talking about how the Lakers have better odds than the Rockets. Well, MyBookie.ag, they don't. MyBookie.ag kind of respects the Rockets, but it still has them at 10th to win the whole damn thing.
Man.
What's more disrespectful? I think, personally, it's one national TV game the rest of the way.
Yes, but I get why they didn't want to oversaturate the TV schedule with the Rockets in case they didn't do what they're doing.
Oh, for sure. I get it going into the year.
You just got to fix it.
You got to fix this somehow.
Yeah, I don't know what all the rules are, but you definitely got to get them on there more. They should be on national TV at least once a week, it feels like.
All right, once a week. We don't want America being sick of this.
Every other week.
I agree.
But yeah, I mean, I guess because Tuesdays and Thursdays, it's hard with TNT just because there's so few games on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But it is weird how limited the flexing is, where really what they should do is just announce all the national TV games up until like MLK Day and then be like, then
figure we'll it out from there.
Yeah.
Would people start that, paying attention?
They did that during the season after the bubble, where they only did the first half schedule because they're like, we're going to have to reschedule all these games anyway. So they just played as many games they could in the first half and then like, we'll schedule the second half when we get there. And they could maybe not do that, you know, drastic of a measure, but something like that to get some more flexibility with the national TV stuff. I think that's more disrespectful.
Yeah, I think my guess is they'll fix a lot of that too, though. They'll flex the Rockets in when they can. And part of that will depend on how the people here react to the Rockets. That will matter. Like, what will the ratings look like last night? Of like what is the buyback of the local Houston fans if they're going to put them on national TV? I do think 10th feels a little extreme to me. Specifically more like the gap in odds between the Grizzlies and the Rockets. Like, the one I'm looking at here is the Grizzlies plus 2,800 to win the NBA championship. The Rockets plus 4,000. They're right by the Suns. Like, the Rockets won't win the championship. Like, they have way better. They're better than the Suns.
It must be truly that the NFL season hasn't ended, and Vegas is like, we'll wait a little bit. We'll let some dreamers dream and put some big bets on these teams that actually don't have much of a chance.
Yeah,
to win the title.
I think that's what it is. I think it's more like the
long odds, great value.
And that the Bucks have shorter odds because more people are just going to be looking and be like, I'm getting Giannis at whatever, plus 1,800? Yeah, are you kidding me? Where it's like, well, they've kind of been all right this year. They're also, you know, probably not going to win the title. Just like the reason the Rockets thing isn't that disrespectful to me, because I'm like, yeah, I don't think they're going to win this thing anyway. Now, if it's odds to like win a series and they had those, which would be super early for those, but like different hypothetical matchups and they're underdogs to all these teams, that's where it's like, all right, guys, what are we doing?
Yeah, and when you look at it too, it's Boston is the favorite at plus 210, Oklahoma City plus 230, and then there is the next team is the Cavs at plus 850. Like, what Vegas is telling us and these websites is that they clearly think it's a two-team race to who's going to win the championship this year. I don't totally agree with that, but outside of Oklahoma City, Boston, and the Cavs, like, I'm not sure who else I'd want to bet on, to be honest. So it's not super disrespectful to the Rockets. The TV is probably worse, but I do think they'll correct it as much as they can.
So it's not always necessarily the best thing to be on national TV, too. For example, right now on one of the Speak for Your Pizza shows, Chris Canty is asking the question, is Joe Burrow, who just had an incredible statistical season, an elite quarterback?
Oh,
and Cam Newton is wearing a hat that looks a paint swatch while also wearing a denim jacket. And on top of that, a vest underneath it. And a bow tie. So
again, I love that hat.
Sometimes things get a little Chris Broussarded on TV, and you don't necessarily need to be there, but you want to be there occasionally and won the rest of the way.
It's a sign of respect.
Yeah.
You know, like
you got an all-star.
I like listening to Craig Ackerman call Rockets games.
I agree with that.
But I also don't want to never be on national TV.
Because I like Kevin Harlan, and it's fun to have inside the NBA actually give credit to the Rockets. We'll play that audio a little bit later. Şengün is an all-star. Some more Şengün fun facts. First-time all-star. Only the second player ever from Turkey to be an all-star. I thought Hedo Turkoglu might have gotten one. Nope.
Who's the other one then?
It's
Mehmet Okur.
Yeah, Okur from the Jazz back in the day.
07. Turkoglu got most improved in all rookie second team, and we're talking like early 2000s for that. Also, he's the son of a fisherman. Thank you, Kevin Harlan, for teaching us that. What? Why are you guys laughing?
I was ready for like son, and then just more
son
than
of a fisherman.
His occupation.
It was the way Kevin said it last night. It's like it was after he did the interview, and he goes, and he's the son of a fisherman. And I was like, thanks, Kevin.
I liked it. It was great.
I'm just ready for like some secondary thing other than
I'm giving fun facts. Okay,
is he 6'8"?
That's a great question.
I would just like to know: is he the world's tallest fisherman? I don't know.
Good question. How does he stay on the boat?
Or is he a small dad that just had a giant kid? I don't know.
Does he listen to a Turkish version of Billy Joel's Downeaster Alexa when he's out with the rod and the reel? I don't know.
Is he still a fisherman to this day?
I hope not. Now, honestly, of all the things, I hope that he's still not a fisherman. But yeah, we learned some things on the broadcast, and Reggie Miller likes good Bad Boys, which Dylan Brooks is.
I think that's a great way to describe Dylan
Brooks.
He's
a good bad boy.
Yeah. Reggie Miller.
Thanks, Reggie.
Reggie Miller was, I mean, this is like,
bag.
This is like a 6 on the Reggie Miller broadcasting goofs level, like his performance last night, where a 10 is just where you're rolling your eyes for 2.5 hours straight. Last night, it was a little Reggie Miller-ish, but it wasn't like, oh my God. It wasn't impacting my enjoyment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when he said that the Amen and Jalen will be able to enjoy that from years to come, I was like, he hasn't looked at Jalen's contract, has he? That was like my immediate thought.
He also said someone should be prosecuted because Jalen Wells was a second-round pick. And I was like, okay, it's not that. He said it's criminal. And I was like, it's not criminal.
He's watching all those depositions for the cabinet. He probably wants to prosecute someone.
Yeah.
By the way, I extended an olive branch last night to the Turkish psychotic Şengün stands. I've realized I've made it a little bit about me. And I saw StatMuse make this post showing Domantas Sabonis next to Alperen Şengün, like these weird portraits of the two of them. And yeah, Sabonis has more points a game and rebounds a game and assists per game. But Şengün has more wins per game. And it's about time that we saw a Turk, not some pro-Russian Lithuanian. I actually have no idea if they're pro-Russia. In the All-Star game. So how about that? You know, you can't put in a close to Russia enough to claim that he's Russian.
Yeah. A Putin asset?
Yeah, you can't put a Putin asset into the All-Star game, especially in San Francisco. Only Chinese players are allowed there.
I am very pro Şengün in this, and to what you said that matters most, wins should matter.
Yeah.
Stats don't just matter. Wins gotta matter too. They gotta matter.
I'm okay with like Kevin Durant being an All-Star. Yeah. He was voted in by the fans. But I'm okay with him being an All-Star. Like, they're the 9 seed? And it's like, yeah, sure, you're in because you're Kevin freaking Durant. Sabonis, you don't get that.
No.
You don't get that
kind
of love.
Your teammate just publicly said he doesn't want to play with you.
Yeah.
So.
Hell yeah. Who said that?
De'Aaron Fox. Well, he said he wanted to
trade. He didn't say I don't want to play with Sabonis.
He said, I can't win here.
He said, I want out.
I
want to sign an extension with the San Antonio
Spurs. He said he'd rather be with Wemby.
Yeah.
Then Sabonis. So Sabonis, you're out.
So it's implied. So see Turkish psychotic Şengün stands. We can hate on other countries too. We're equal opportunity haters, and we'll hate on San Francisco too because of the time that they allowed Xi Jinping to come in and they cleaned up all the homeless and then they're all back. Anyway, that's fine. Hey, it's Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Coming up next, we're gonna figure out what the hell's happening with Alex Bregman from Chandler Rome. Stay put. And joining us right now on the HRNP guest line. From The Athletic, and on top of that, a podcast that sometimes features Josh Reddick being interviewed from a ski slope, the Crush City Territory podcast that Chandler does with him and Tyler Stafford. Chandler, thanks for joining us, and hopefully no one gets traded or signed like the last time you came on when Kyle Tucker got traded as we were on the phone.
I mean, at this point, I'd welcome it. I need this whole saga to end so I can like have like a week of doing nothing before going to West Palm.
Before we get into Alex Bregman, Ryan Presley is officially a Chicago Cub. He waived his no trade clause. Was that because of the sour feelings? Was it because of all the reporting that seemingly was pressuring him to like get the message, dude, you're not wanted anymore? Did he look at Chicago as a better opportunity? What's the main reason he's gone?
I mean, I don't think there's one main reason. I think And as I tried to illustrate in the reporting and kind of when this all went down, they had been trying to do this all winter. This was not, you know, there seemed to start to be this connection of they traded Ryan Pressly to make a legitimate run at Alex Bregman. It just so happened that those two things coincided at the same time that Bregman, that the Astros got back in on Bregman and Pressly was traded. This had been something that they were trying to do stretching back to November. The foremost motivation from the Astros side was this was a salary dump. I mean, I know Dana Brown tried to talk up Juan Bello like he's going to be some 8-time Cy Young Award winner when he was on the Zoom the other day, but they didn't trade Ryan Pressly for a return. They traded Ryan Pressly to get rid of most of his salary. This was a salary dump, plain and simple. Dana Brown's fractured relationship with Ryan Pressly contributed somewhat. I talked to at least one person that said that that was at least a little bit of a factor as to why they put him on the market, but make no mistake, this was to get rid of his money. As to why Ryan Pressly did it, I mean, you heard what he said to the Cubs reporters when he was on Zoom the other day. Like, I don't think he wanted to leave. And in fact, he said that. He said he wanted to retire as an Astro, which, I mean, he could still do. They could re-sign him after this season, I suppose. But I don't think he wanted to leave. I think there were some hard feelings. And I think, to be quite frank with you, like, look at the Cubs and the Astros just in terms of their roster, in terms of their division. Like, if they don't have, like, the same, you know, win probability of winning their division and you know, getting to the playoffs, like, I may say the Cubs may have a little bit better of a chance. Like, it may be a better overall situation going to Chicago. I think there's fewer just overall questions with the Cubs than there are with the Astros. So don't lose that factor either, that, you know, the Cubs are in a pretty ideal position as to what they've done this winter. That division is very winnable. And, you know, Ryan Pressly wanted to close, and he was never going to close here, not when Josh Hader's making $19.5 million.
Chandler, is Alex Bregman an Astro, a Cub, a Tiger? Where are we at with all this?
Yeah, you know, ever since this whole thing started about 2 weeks ago, like, I never thought the Astros were the favorites. Like, there was some reporting out there that suggested this was fait accompli, that, you know, Bregman was going to come back and it was going to be this grand welcoming. And yes, he still could come back and it still could happen, but I've never thought that the Astros were the favorites, and I've never thought that this was a sure thing to happen. You know, I think it's, you know, as to where he ends up, I can't tell you. I don't know that. I do think he has compelling offers. I don't think this is a situation where he's got, you know, no interest and the Astros are just kind of lingering and hoping he falls back. I think he's got competitive offers. Like, he's got the sort of offers that are going to intrigue him from other teams. And I think at this point it's just a matter of Alex kind of needs to either make a decision or they need to do the final full court press on the five owners involved, the five GMs involved, to kind of see, all right, what's the last offer, what's the last thing, and then the negotiations are going to pick up from there. But I would not characterize the Astros as the favorite. I never have. So I don't know where he ends up, but I think it's becoming less likely that it's going to be back here.
Chandler Rome of The Athletic and the Crush City Territory podcast with us on the HR&P guest line. The rumors about the Astros going after Jorge Polanco, you reported that, like, they were going after him, but now he goes back to the Seattle Mariners. How serious was their pursuit of Polanco?
Oh, it was very serious, to the point where, like, I don't want to say down the road, but they got outbid. The Mariners, from my understanding, the Mariners gave him more money than the Astros were prepared to. And, you know, maybe that's a sensible move, given that he had, you know, pretty major knee surgery in October coming off of a major operation. You know, they've cleared him to do baseball activities in spring training. He needs to be 100% for opening day. But, I mean, almost $8 million for that, that was a little more than the Astros were willing to pay, from my understanding. So they got outbid on that one. So, but it was serious, don't get me wrong. And I think all of this, even if Bregman doesn't come back, you know, we've heard so much this last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks about Jose Altuve's defense and his position and where he's going to end up playing. Like, if they would have signed Jorge Polanco, Jorge Polanco would have been the primary second baseman, from my understanding, and Jose Altuve would have played the majority of his time in left field. Now, that they would have, you know, they would have worked, they would have proceeded with caution with Polanco, and Altuve would have played some second base, but it would have been, you know, a primary shift there. And, you know, if Bregman, if that long shot happens and Bregman comes back, we've already, you know, discussed that Jose Altuve would be in left field. And I think now this prompts legitimate questions about Jose Altuve's defensive future. He was never going to end his career as the Astros second baseman. He is a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's a really, really good player, but you can't ignore the defensive metrics right now. He's, if not the worst, maybe the second worst defensive second baseman in baseball. This is an Astros pitching staff that has two pitchers atop its rotation in Valdez and Brown that induce more ground balls than any pitchers in baseball. They need a good infield behind them, and last year the right side of their defensive infield was terrible with Altuve and with the carousel that they had at first base. Now, they have Christian Walker now, three-time Gold Glover. I think he will help if Altuve does play second primarily this year. I think having Christian Walker there will help. His range is better. He can just kind of cover up something, but it's hard to hide a bad defensive second baseman across 162 games, as you saw last year. So what I will be fascinated to see is once the Bregman saga concludes, where does Altuve play defensively next year, and how does that, you know, impact what Joe Espada does on a daily basis?
So I guess, do you feel like that could be lead to Dubon as your everyday second baseman then, Chandler? Or is it an outside solution or even a hopeful early promotion from one of the young guys to play second base?
I mean, I think the Dubon thing is probably the easiest way to go. And look, I'm going to be completely honest with you. This is totally conjecture on my part. I haven't done a ton of reporting on this specifically, but, you know, to me, you know, it's kind of the actions speak louder than words. And we've all seen the pictures of Altuve working in left field at Daikin Park. You know, he talked about it at FanFest last week, that that's something he'd be open to doing, moving to left field. I don't know if that is their plan this year, but if it is the plan that they want to do, then yeah, it makes sense. Dubon could play second. Altuve could play left. And look, they could still do a situation where Jose Altuve plays some second base. I don't think they want to move Jose Altuve to left field permanently. I think it's a situation where, you know, maybe, honestly, to protect his legs a little bit, maybe try to get him in the left field a little bit. I don't think they can afford to run him out there at second base for 155 games, especially as a 35-year-old, a guy getting older. So Dubon, you know, that makes a ton of sense. They need Bryce Matthews to take a step. I know Bryce Matthews has, you know, he's got the prospect cachet, but if you kind of look at what he did in winter ball this winter and you look at kind of how he did this past year, it was not a great year for him. He wasn't bad, but I don't think he took the step that the Astros thought he would. You know, they need him to take a step forward this year. They need him to maybe be knocking on the door. Cam Smith kind of profiles as more of a corner guy. I think they are going to try him in the corner outfield in spring training. You look at that. And then, you know, I wouldn't be surprised either if the Astros can, if they are exploring a trade, you know, late in this winter, if they explore a trade for maybe a more veteran outfielder, just to get a corner guy in here to play a little bit of left field, get some certainty there, and then they can kind of do this Altuve and left field thing. They can do it a little more gradually instead of having to force it so quick.
Chandler Rome with us from The Athletic on the HRNP guest line. On that front, you mentioned, okay, maybe they look at outfielders. Are there any names other than Alex Bregman that they're linked to right now in any of those positions, given that Jorge Polanco is going to the Mariners, a guy that they wanted to bring in but they were outbid for?
You know, it's hard to know just because, I mean, we can think certain guys are available in trades. We can think that certain teams are engaged in, you know, they want to trade this guy and this guy, and then there could be guys that we aren't even thinking about that are on the block. So it's a lot harder to to nail down and report, like, okay, this guy is who they're targeting. Like, it could be a ton of different things with teams. You don't know who's selling, who's what teams are offering, things like that. But you kind of look around, and the Giants have a couple of surplus outfielders. The D-backs have some surplus outfield talent. But you wonder how much the Astros have to offer. Like, I mean, this week has been prospect week, right? You've seen all the outside publications, including The Athletic, roll out their farm system rankings, roll out their top 100s, roll out the top 30s for each team, and the Astros remain at the bottom of basically every farm system ranking. So they don't have a ton to offer. So I find it hard to believe that it would be a guy with multiple years of control. I find it hard to believe that it would be a guy in his pre-arb years, because, I mean, those inherently cost more in prospect capital. So you're probably, if you want to start being a sleuth and kind of looking at who would make sense, maybe look for guys on one-year deals, look for guys, you know, rental players that are heading into free agency that aren't making a ton of money. Maybe that sort of guy is the ideal fit, because I don't think the Astros have enough in their farm to get much more than that.
Chandler, last one for you. Do you think that the money they saved with Ryan Pressly, I mean, is that pretty much what they're willing to spend? Is $8.5 million if it's not Alex Bregman, or are they willing to spend more on a player they trade for? Like, how hard is their cap right now, do you think?
Well, it's hard to know, because the last two winters, including this one, I've reported, and it's been right, that Jim Crane has been reluctant to go over the luxury tax. And then last year he gave $95 million to Josh Hader on a whim. And this year they're apparently you know, back in the Bregman sweepstakes, which would skyrocket them over the CBT. So the short answer is I don't really know. I think if given his druthers, he would stay under it. But he only kind of exceeds it for that, you know, pardon the pun, that luxury item. And he viewed Josh Hader as a luxury item. Alex Bregman certainly fits that mold too. If there's, and you know, beyond Bregman, there's really nothing else that would quantify as that. So I would kind of say that they would probably stay under if they don't bring Bregman back. And then you also have to remember too that they've got to save some room for the trade deadline. If they're in a position to add at the deadline, they probably want to save a little bit to take on some salary then too. And as Jim Crane has shown, you know, when this team is in it at the deadline, he's unafraid to make those bold decisions, take on, you know, bigger salaries, and kind of throw caution to the wind and go for it. So they also have to be prepared for that contingency.
He is Chandler Rome. You can catch his work in The Athletic and, on top of that, the Crush City Territory podcast with Josh Reddick and Tyler Stafford. Chandler, always appreciate your time, and hopefully no news has broken while we've been talking with one another. Oh, is Bregman retiring? I'm kidding. Thank you, Chandler. We'll talk to you again hopefully soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
He is Chandler Rome. All right. What'd you think about that, Joe?
Interesting. The Polanco, I can't believe they got outbid for Jorge Polanco.
By the Mariners.
I hate that, like, of all the things that Chandler just, like, a lot of great information, just, like, really. Like, honestly, I'm glad they got outbid for my
home. I am too.
Shout out to you, Seattle.
But it is just hearing you got outbid by Seattle, you know, yeah, it stinks, as Sean's making this motion behind the back. Because it makes you feel like a poor. Even if Polanco, and I looked at all his numbers, and I'm like, yeah, hard pass. But just to get outbid by Seattle is a little embarrassing.
Yeah, and the fact that he would have been the primary second baseman. It is, man, like, it's, that's why this Altuve thing, this is not new news. It just got leaked at a very interesting time, I think. This must have been something that Altuve and Dana Brown and them have been talking about for a little bit here, of the eventual move to left field. And I don't know if this was another attempt from Altuve and Scott Boras to put pressure on the Astros, because at the end of the season, obviously, he said he wanted Alex Bregman back. And then all of a sudden, he conveniently said he would move to left field, and the Alex Bregman rumors went crazy. So I guess we're going to see a lot of Altuve in left no matter what this year, which I do understand. I do get it. But it's going to be fascinating to watch.
Chandler, also, remember we had our hot takey hypothetical yesterday. What if Ryan Pressly left because the Cubs are better? Chandler entertained it.
I think he said it. Honestly, like, I mean, he pretty much said it. It's he. They're so close. They're honestly, like, I really think they're very, very close. I bet you if we look at their win totals right now, they're very similar.
I was going to ask, are win totals out already?
Yeah, they will be. I'll find him here by the time the segment's over.
He's so excited. Joe's like, yeah, Cubs, Astros?
I have
they're both at 85 wins?
I want to have, like, major reservations, honestly, about the Cubs. So
this is
hey, what number did you just give, Sean?
I said 85.
Well, the Cubs are 85.5 and the Astros are 86.5.
Whoa!
So on the money from Mapes.
Dang.
Money Mapes over there.
Who knows ball?
I like how now that it's becoming more real, you're like, I don't know.
That's probably why I went to say it.
Like, just got confirmed by a baseball insider.
Actually seeing them listed next to each other.
I'm just like, I don't know. But no, I mean, I think the division will be easier to win. So it does make that more, you know, it could be a better option. But again, like, Presley's not going to close. Like, he might not close. He left because pretty much Dana Brown didn't want him here, and he didn't like Dana Brown. Kind of feels like that's what it came down to. So, I also didn't leave that, and I know Chandler, you know, said he was very fair with what information he had, but it just doesn't, like, scream like they're going to make a big move this year. And just feels like Dubon, McCormick, Myers, Altuve, Taylor Trammell, or whatever his name is like your combination of your outfielders and second baseman this year.
Yeah, it does feel that way. We're just seeing Bob Nightingale constantly tweet out the same thing over and over again. But now there's no more Ryan Presley, no trade clause. He just keeps saying the Astros have a 6-year, $156 million offer out there, and that the Red Sox and Tigers are co-favorites for Bregman. There are a couple other people that weighed in on this from the MLB Network. First off, you had Jim Bowden. He was on, I think, MLB Network Radio, and he was asked about the possibility of the Astros bringing back Alex Bregman. Some interesting things along the way, some of them wrong. Here is Jim Bowden, who I think was a general manager once.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
Yeah.
He usually likes the Astros. He's usually very pro-Astros.
Usually or always?
I think it's actually, it might be always.
Okay.
He's very always.
Here is Jim Bowden.
As long as you have the Paredes trade in, you know, ready to go for that left-hand hitting outfielder that they're going to need. I mean, they need help in the outfield. Now, if you can take Paredes and you can spin him for a left-hand hitting outfielder and then sign Bregman back, that makes sense. If you sign Bregman now, then, you know, you're kind of complicating things a little bit, right? Because, you know, you want to put Paredes at second. He's not a good second baseman. And you're going to take away one of the best defensive second basemen in Altuve, and you're going to put him in left field where he doesn't have an arm to throw. I mean, he'll play out there because he's Jose Altuve and he wants Bregman back. But baseball-wise, that's not a smart play. And what I'm being told from people in Tampa, they don't think Paredes would be adequate enough in left field to be the everyday left fielder there.
That's what I suggested, like, when all this happened, was, like, could they flip Paredes? It does depends on the contract that Bregman signed, right? You're not going to, let's say it was a one-year $40 million deal. Just, like, all in 1 year, hit the market next year, go back out. You wouldn't flip Paredes. But if you signed Bregman to a five-year deal, like, you need a lefty bat. You need an outfielder. Moving Paredes would be logical. I disagree with Jim. I think they would just put him at second base.
I disagree with Jim saying Altuve is good at second base. Like, he said he's one of the best defenders at second base. But we might need to call this show George and Gallant now. I mean, Joe, that was a suggestion.
You know, no, it's Gallant and George.
Okay.
You talk first.
Okay. More analysis about the future of Alex Bregman. Jeff Blum thinks he will be back. This also from the MLB Network. Here's Geoff.
My gut is he comes back. I just think, man, for me personally, and you know this too, Casey, you know, when you're in a ballpark where you've had a lot of success and you've got a ballpark that's built for your swing, I think Alex Bregman is the absolute prototype to put in a place like Minute Maid Park. And he's also the guy that kind of is, he's the stick that stirs their drink inside clubhouse. Mm-hmm. Losing him wouldn't be just losing production at third base or a gold glove at third base. It would be losing a guy who's your pitching coach, hitting coach, infield coach, on the field, in the middle of the game. He really proved to be a value for these guys emotionally and mentally.
Emotionally and mentally.
Yeah, I think you can always find new leaders. I think that's kind of, you know, you can. Remember when Carlos Correa left?
Yeah.
And who's going to do mound visits?
The same sense.
Yeah, they were okay.
Except for the one World Series.
Yeah.
The next year, yeah, with the rookie shortstop.
But that, but since then.
No rings.
You're right.
Now they're losing Ryan Presley.
Leader.
And Bregman.
I mean, yeah, who is going to fix the pitchers? Because clearly it's not the pitching coaches. It is Ryan Presley and Alex Bregman that fixed Hunter Brown. So
that's at least.
I mean, it's fact.
The story.
that's what Hunter Brown says.
Yeah.
He doesn't credit his pitching coaches to fixing him. Damn. Like, I don't know if Hayden Wesneski is going to be able to, you know, have the impact that they thought he was without Alex Bregman here and Ryan Presley here.
Yeah, dang, that's a good point.
Oof. I do think it's interesting that now that's Blum, scary. Rosenthal have both, like, their gut says Houston. It's because the offers must be, while Chandler says substantial, I think they're close enough to where the Astros, if they're willing to budge, which it seems like they're not willing to do, can get Bregman back. And I don't know how much they have to budge. Because if they had to budge a lot, he would be signed somewhere else. Like, if it was really that much more money, he'd be in Boston where Alex Cora wants him. He'd be in Detroit.
Yeah.
With AJ Hinch. He'd be in Chicago where, like, they're offering him more money for less years. But, like, he might have. The contracts can't be that far apart, or he'd be on another team.
Or at least we would be talking about, like, the Astros have no chance.
Yeah.
Like, we're not getting the every 48 hours Bob Nightingale reporting the same thing that he reported 48 hours ago of, oh, Astros still have a chance. Offer has not moved. That wouldn't be happening if their offer was getting blown out of the water.
Well, the weekend is young, and we know what Bob was doing all last weekend, which was basically saying that Ryan Presley was going to get traded, but if he needed to waive his no-trade clause for it to happen first. And then he eventually did. Was it because of Bob Nightingale peer-pressuring Presley for the Astros? I guess we'll never know. But we got Sean Mapes behind the glass. We got Joe George to my right. I am Paul Gallant. It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You want to chime in, 713-780-3776 to call in and text. We have a question for you. Power rank, 1 through 4, the teams most likely to win a championship in Houston sports. It's like the next one. Power rank them, 1 through 4. We'll give you our answers on the other side. Stay put.